I will call to order this meeting of the Customer Service Committee of the Illinois State Toll Highway Authority. Roll call.
Committee Chair Director Reddick.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Towns.
Here.
We have a forum.
Thank you very much. I'll take a motion on the approval of the minutes of the February 15, 2012 committee meeting.
So moved.
Seconded. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Those are passed as submitted. Before moving on, first of all, I want to thank everybody for accommodating my schedule and that we moved the meeting from last month, the third Wednesday, to this month. There is an issue. Director Banks is, and Director Darcy have switched committee assignments. Director Banks is going to be joining this committee. We need to consider a permanent rescheduling or the schedule for this committee to accommodate those schedules. And one of the things that happened by moving this committee from the regular monthly schedule is apparently it was appreciated or a little bit easier from a staff perspective. And so as we're going down that road, I want to consider that as part of this. And I'm going to ask that staff kind of coordinate taking a look at that and try and coordinate schedules with the directors, and we'll see if we can get something done in the next 30 days or so.
Great.
That's all I have under my section of the agenda. I'll move on to the executive director.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Chair and Director.
Thank you.
Very formal today, I'm sorry. So we have, I think, a presentation that Sean is going to give. I know Joe Campbell is also here to weigh in. We're going to, I think, go over some additional elements of our electronic tolling system, update you on some, you know, additional customer service improvements and refinements to our various processes that we think will be helpful and beneficial to customers, and get your feedback on those. And also talk a little bit about the truck renewal, which is the contract of, you know, service for our electronic toll collection system. We are not in a position to ask for your approval of an actual renewal today. We are still negotiating. But we did want to just touch base with you on it and let you know that if we are in a position, we would like to try to take this to the full board and maybe have an open discussion at that board meeting, since we won't have had a chance to review it in committee. But we would like to try to do that this month, since the contract isn't expiring, I think, July 1, right, end of June?
Yeah, June. I think June 30th is the last actually that contract.
So so that's just kind of an overview. So, Shauna, would you like to start with the presentation and the work plan?
Good afternoon, everyone. I think if we put through our agendas, we'll get to the PowerPoint here that I think I'm able to click through. The first slide is just a reminder of what we've talked about before. That word complete, sometimes when this goes to a PDF, it floats. Complete should be over American Express fees. But it happens about 60% of the time in the PDF. I'm not sure why. But we wanted to go over a few different things today. We wanted to answer the question that people have asked us the last time we met about where we stand with relation to other tollways when it comes to our violations framework. Because a lot of us hear from customers who are not happy with the level of our fines and the timing of our notices and things like that. So we went out to the industry to put together kind of a table, an explanation of where we stand with relation to our what I would like to call our industry peers. You can't just compare us to any tollway out there. New Jersey is a giant system, which is great from a transaction viewpoint, but they're gated. So it's hardly the same thing. If you blow through a gate, you owe a big fine. You've clearly done something pretty bad. It's different. The world is different when you're talking about open road tolling like we have, and this is part of open road tolling for some places, all electronic tolling, where there truly is no cash option. So we defined our industry peers kind of as we've noted here. They have to have open road tolling or be all electronic. They have to have multiple roadways or traffic corridors, so just a single bridge or a single managed lane, which you often find in California. doesn't quite cut it to compare up against the work we do. And they have to operate within the United States. We often find that European tollways like to compare themselves with us because of the technology we use and or our volumes, but the reality is they operate under such different business models and actually somewhat different technologies that it's hard to compare us quite the same way. And really different legislative frameworks. What they're able to do to collect a toll is very different than what we're able to do.
There are often state or national mandates or something along those lines.
Yeah.
They have just a little different structure than the United States does.
I think in France it's actually illegal. Like it's a federal offense not to have a car that is programmed for toll payment. So, I mean, these are things that we can't really compare ourselves against. I don't think we're going to be passing anything like that soon. So we identified our industry peers, E-470, Public Highway Authority in Denver, Georgia in the Atlanta area, the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority, and the North Texas Tollway Authority, which is in Dallas. Those are really our industry peers. And then what I put together were three different slides that talk about how we compare up in three different ways. So from the perspective of fines, from the perspective of how long we allow people to pay, and the perspective of what is the trigger transaction that gets somebody a notice. So, starting on that first one, fines, you can see that if you pay, if you violate, if you go through one of our lanes without paying, you owe the cash rate of the toll and $20 for each of those missed transactions, and you owe that the first time that we connect with you. Then we give you a late notice, and then we tack on an additional $50 for each missed transaction. Compare that up against the others, where you'll see that Denver also charges the cash rate, but they don't charge anything else. They don't charge fines when they first contact you. And in fact, even the second time they contact you, they only put an additional $5 on the whole notice, not even per transaction. And then even the third time that they contact you, that only goes up to $15 extra per notice. So people who drive in the Denver area actually apparently frequently choose not to get transponders because they can kind of manage through this. Which is why, you know, it's called a warning, not a notice.
Right.
They also, I believe, in Denver called an invoice.
But based on what we had talked about before, the warning, classification as a warning, doesn't that create issues when you're dealing with other Secretary of States in providing us with the information for out-of-state?
There are some motor vehicle departments in the country that only want to provide information on registered owners when there is a violation in play. So this is not really a huge problem for Denver the same way it would be for a place with a ton of interstate traffic. They really handle local traffic and then from some of their contiguous states. Not quite like us, where we have a decent amount of throughput from a number of other states.
Okay.
So this certainly works for them in a way that it wouldn't necessarily for us, but it is a very interesting point of comparison because it is at the other end of the kind of that dollar scale, right? When you're just thinking about fines.
Right.
Georgia, a little bit more like us, they send a violation notice right away. They charge you $25 for each missed transaction. They give you one more chance to pay, and then they tack on an additional amount that's pretty hefty. $70. Mm-hmm. And if you Google them, you can see some articles about how people feel about it. Miami-Dade Expressway, they also just send a warning at the beginning. They charge you a cash rate that's 25% higher. They put a kind of a processing fee on that notice. Then they send you another reminder, and then they actually create a citation process where you start going through a legal hearing process, which does have additional fines attached, but kind of on down the road. And then finally, Dallas, they also send just a warning at the beginning. They charge the cash rate, which is 50% higher. If you don't respond to that warning at all, that's when you start getting an additional fee at $8 per notice. And then by the third time that you hear from them, they'll charge an additional $6.60 per mistransaction, but they'll cap it at $200. And one thing that really jumps out at me on this page is how there are no great protocols in the electronic tolling world. This really is a new industry, and people are trying all sorts of things. And if this doesn't kind of show that, you know, I don't know what would. I don't know if there are any questions about fines, but there are kind of two other ways that we compare ourselves. The next one is days to pay. So we give people 21 days to pay when they first hear from us, and then another 14 days to pay before things get bad. And that third communication, I kind of put not applicable, because that's when things start in different states to go different legal directions, depending on if they're allowed to do citations, force them through a hearings process, if some of them do, et cetera. But you can see in the first and the second communications that we actually have very short turnaround times compared to our industry peers. E-470 has 30 days to pay for each notice. Atlanta, 30 days, and then 90 days, which I thought was a lengthy amount of time. Miami-Dade, 30 days, 30 days. Dallas, 30 days, 30 days. And then finally, the missed transactions. So this missed transactions thing is all about what is it that gets you a notice. Do you get a notice for absolutely every single violation? You know, do you violate at 8 a.m. in the morning and by 5 p.m. somebody's sending you out a notice? Usually not. There are usually some rules in there, but again, because it's electronic tolling and there are no great protocols out there, people have very different approaches to this. We do three missed transactions within 2 years, and on that third missed transaction, we send you a notice and we send it within 90 days. So that's our rule. Denver will do it with just one missed transaction. And they'll send it within 1 month of that first missed transaction. And then whatever else is accumulated during that month will be part of that first notice.
And these are their self-reported. This is what they're telling us their
right.
standards
are.
Right.
We reached out to them and talked to them about this to try to understand.
So it seems, given our experience, you know, you would imagine that 30-day number or something like that might change depending on whether they're pursuing somebody out of state where they have to get license plates or, you know, owner information. Just because that does seem to take maybe a little bit longer.
When we've talked to other tollways about it, that is true to some degree, but none of them seem to have quite the amount of interstate traffic that we do. So they often have special agreements with a couple of states that they actually border, and that's really what they focus on.
Yep.
And whereas we really do a national sweep in a way that I don't think most tollways have to deal with. But yes, that's a good point. And they're constantly changing. They're tweaking these all the time, these rules. Everybody's trying to figure it out.
Well, the interesting thing, from my perspective, is as you take a look at the first breakdown that we did, the fines, they're the quickest to send out the notice.
Mm-hmm.
And their fine structure is the lowest. And I mean, I would be hard-pressed to believe that they're not losing money on their collection. I mean, we wouldn't be able to operate in that framework.
There are no public financial statements from them that we're able to gauge that on, but I think your observation might be a fair one. It is a difficult framework.
Certainly you can imagine that, you know, what that one specifically or generally, that, you know, there is potentially a greater, you know, risk to revenue with any all-electronic system, right? But also when you're not compensating with high fines.
I just think it's something we need to consider as we're evaluating these and be aware of.
And one thing that might be a little bit different for a place like Denver is it's a greater portion of their traffic is truly daily commuters versus, you know, truckers going from one coast to the other or whatever. So I think they have a different traffic pool than we do. So perhaps for them, this type of approach would be more sustainable, but I agree. I think it sounds like a a lot of money to spend sending these out so quickly and so frequently. Atlanta will, they require 3 missed transactions in a year, and then they'll send you a notice when you've missed that 3rd transaction.
It wipes the slate clean. If you've only missed 2 in a year, then you start over again the next calendar year or 12-month period? Do you know?
I think it's rolling.
Okay.
I should double check that, and
I'm sorry to.
No, that's a fair point. But I'm almost positive it's rolling,
rolling
for
year,
my
yeah.
discussion. Calendar versus rolling Atlanta. Miami-Dade, you have to have 2 missed transactions within a year. And then it gets complicated. And it fascinates me from a computer programming perspective, because I have a hard time imagining this. So if you miss both of your transactions within 7 days, you will get that notice. That notice will go out to you 7 days from that first missed transaction. If you miss two transactions farther apart from 7 days, that notice will go out to you immediately upon the second transaction. Missed transaction. And then they also have, and that's mostly for people who are violating for the first time in that area. For people who consistently violate there, they really just send a notice every month. So every 30 days, if you're already in their system as a violator, you'll just get one after that first time. You'll get one every 30 days. A notice that shows all the accumulated transactions that have been building. Then Dallas, they wait to send you a notice until you've hit 30 transactions or 30 days, whichever comes first. So we are the only ones with 2 years, you know, that will go back 2 years. But it does seem as if everybody has some sort of time frame in there that they consider. They really don't send every single one. Let's see. So then that takes us kind of to the next slide that where we might want to talk a little bit about when we're doing our financial modeling, which, you know, we've initiated, but it takes a long time to confirm the sustainability of different models for fine structures and time frames and whatnot. What are the things that we really should consider as the parameters? I think it might be useful to possibly get some input on this topic, because then when we come back to you with the results, you know, you'll be able to see reflected what you've been interested in. And on the flip side of that, it's one thing to kind of change your fine structure and your timing structure, but when you do that, you typically have to tighten up the settlement and collection policies, because you typically can't be quite as forgiving about those things. If you're more forgiving on the front end, it's harder to be as forgiving on the back end. Kind of one or the other.
Well, I think that there's, you know, a financial reality that we have to deal with, kind of what I alluded to earlier, in that you know, we've got an operation that we have to sustain, and that we have to make sure that our policy is consistent with that and allows us to operate in that manner. That being said, I think you know, to kind of generally say where this committee was before, when we talked about this, we talked about a little bit more of a customer-based or a customer-friendly approach to this policy. And from my perspective, from, you know, my goals here, I think we need to use this as an opportunity to reach out and hopefully make potential violators potential customers or future customers. And so really, in taking a look at this slide and the 3 things that you have here, you know, I'd like to take a look at a model that is a little less punitive, really up front
kind of up front, though, a less punitive model up front.
Right, the first notice with the larger fines. And perhaps, and I think it's borne out in taking a look at these other systems, I think the 2-year lag period might be a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, and I really think if we're going to go to this customer-based approach, I would take a look at it in the second PowerPoint, in the second dot there, the settlement policies. I think we have an opportunity, and perhaps we need to formalize a policy that if whatever the fine structure is based on certain parameters or certain activities that these people may take, whether it's they don't currently have a transponder and they're not a customer, but they're willing to become, then that will allow for certain reductions kind of in a formalized policy. Or if they have one that they haven't been maintaining, you know, by putting money onto it and, you know, actively bringing the account up so that we're, you know, getting them into, to, you know, good stead with us. I think that might be a way to look at it. That's what I'd like to see.
It's a good, I mean, it's a good point that something that encourages people to get an iPass, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have, you know, and adding that to some of the settlement guidelines that, that we have, because, you know, there's certainly cases of people bringing their account up to date or, you know, adding a credit card, adding dollars, but that encouraging them to become, you know, an iPass holder or transponder holder, you know, and maybe there's some incentive that we can, I think, you know, it's an excellent point that we can, we certainly can look at. What do we find with, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but, you know, certainly with settlement, but also collection policies and some of these other areas, do they, are they pretty aggressive when people, when they've given people many opportunities and they still don't, they don't pay, are they pretty aggressive typically, or how do we?
Some places are pretty aggressive in that they will actually do traffic citations, and you'll sometimes find articles as such as people will be put in jail overnight for unpaid tolls. That happened in Texas, and I mean, happens some, it's not uncommon, but there have been some articles about it that have hit the newspapers. That to me is pretty punitive. If you have unpaid tolls, you end up in jail. There are some states where they will hit your tax returns. That takes a level of kind of data coordination that is not super easy, but it really does get people's attention because there it is. And then there are some states that are starting to experiment with things like wage management and whatnot. Almost all of the states and all of the tollways that we've seen do report to credit reporting agencies like we do. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. But I would imagine that our collection policies are at present, I would put them in average. They're not horribly punitive. We're not putting anybody in jail. But we are reporting them, and we're reporting them very consistently. And every week we suspend registrations.
So it sounds, though, like that when we do look at the financial modeling, and I think we would fully expect to do this, we would, you know, want to take a look at the impact overall to revenue and kind of that leakage number, and just make sure we're not doing something that's ultimately going to, you know, drive up lost revenue.
Right.
But we can really, you know, try to take as neutral a view on that as possible, or revenue neutral. So we'll take a look at that. Anything else as we're thinking about modeling that we, whether, you know, financial modeling, I mean, these will be particularly applicable as we think about opening, you know, the Elgin O'Hare. 294-57 will also be all electronic, but it'll be one interchange, a major interstate interchange. But it won't, you know, an entire roadway that's all electronic is going to be something different for customers to experience, assuming nothing else goes all electronic between now and the time that the Elgin O'Hare opens. I can't imagine it would. So, you know, these will certainly be pertinent discussion topics.
I would think that as we take a look at this financial modeling, I just want to make sure that it's significant enough or in-depth enough so that we're taking a look at the threshold amounts for what activity and collection, that we're, we make sure that we're there and we've got some idea on what those threshold amounts, where it's going to work, and take the next step. Because let's
kind of the elasticity of the driver. Like, what catches their attention versus...
Well, yeah, it's really got to be twofold. Number one, what's effective, what's the, you know, perhaps can be effective in getting the attention and serving our purpose of collecting and you know, making sure that we're made whole. But by the same token, making sure that we don't come up with any policies that are too labor-intensive or activity-intensive based on the collection for a relatively small amount of a fine, because although it's, you know, we're not parents here. Sometimes I understand, you know, in parenting you're going to expend more effort to try and make a point on something, and I think we need to face the financial realities of how we're going to deal with this and not cut off our nose to spite our face in that.
We are trying to use the payment data that we have to understand what different pain points are for customers, you know, what would make them pay attention and whatnot. We've talked to other tollways about it. Nobody has perfect data or a solution on it. It's not like there's great market research like there is in years and years of retail, but we're hoping we can get something that approaches that in some sort of sense.
This is helpful, so we'll go back and evaluate, and you know that 2-year rule is kind of hard programmed into the system that we have, but certainly as we're updating it, that flexibility on that look back, I think, based on what we've seen.
Yeah, that will evolve.
Yeah, we have flexibility there.
Well, I appreciate everybody talking through it, because I think this is going to be one of the kind of larger and analytical challenges we face. It's exciting, but it's also something that we need feedback on up front. So thank you. The next thing is just a little update on our call center. I know we've talked about it on and off in this group for some time. And just to refresh everybody's memory, this grayed out part of the slide is just something we've talked through before. We had an original customer service contract that was established in 2005 with TransCor, and it contained 4 different functionalities: image review, transponder fulfillment, which is just mailing out transponders that people request, printing and mailing, which is mailing out all of our notices and correspondence, and then the call center, that 1-800 number, the call center, payment processing, where they open envelopes and apply payments to accounts. Those were the 4 parts of that original contract. 3 of them we have successfully peeled away and put into the hands of state use vendors. Image review is with Bridgeway Training Services. Transponder fulfillment is with Printers Mark. And printing and mailing, actually transponder fulfillment is with Ava McKinley. Printing and mailing is with Printers Mark. But the call center has remained with TransCor for the time being, because it is a massive, massive operation. It exists in space that we rent in Lyle, right down the street from us. And it is proven much more difficult to just peel off and hand to another vendor. So we've been working on 2 fronts to get us much closer to transitioning to a new vendor. One is the recognition that it is not ideal to operate in leased space